Roger Williams University is hosting a crisis management seminar on May 3rd at their Providence campus. Crises, whether a natural disaster, cyber attack, or financial instability, can have severe repercussions if not handled properly. This is where crisis management plays a pivotal role. Join Roger Williams MBA students and expert speakers to learn how to prepare for the unexpected. The program is totally free and open to the public. You can register online at rwu.edu/events/crisis-management-symposium.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
Inside Public Health is brought to you by CCA Health Rhode Island. Commonwealth Care Alliance, or CCA, is a multi-state integrated care system influencing innovative models of complex care nationwide. CCA's uncommon care model focuses on sustainable and evidence-based healthcare breakthroughs that improve the health and well-being of people with significant needs and is consistently recognized as one of the best models in the country at identifying and serving traditionally hard-to-reach individuals. CCA is excited to bring uncommon care to Rhode Islanders with a range of Medicare Advantage plans. Learn more by visiting commonwealthcarealliance.org/Rhode Island. Today we have a triangular table, I guess, right? Since there's three of us and some real heavy hitters on the program today. First of all, Sophie Hansen, LICSW, who is the Director of State Government Relations for CCA Health Rhode Island. A licensed clinical social worker, Sophie has extensive experience in working to address systemic issues in behavioral and mental health, healthcare policy, and child welfare. In her role at CCA Health Rhode Island, Sophie establishes and executes individualized state advocacy plans and communicating, advocating, and executing proactive state government affairs that advance CCA's goals at the state level for Massachusetts and Rhode Island. We're also joined by Chris Gadbois, Chief Executive Officer of CareLink RI. Chris is a seasoned healthcare leader and public health professional with significant experience in community-based service delivery. She has worked both within health and human service organizations and with interagency and governmental collaborations to provide improved health via development of programs to improve integrated and coordinated care for vulnerable populations. Chris holds a doctorate in nursing practice and a master's in community health nursing and is adjunct faculty at Salve Regina and Brown. She serves on a number of boards, including Rhode Island's Long-Term Coordinating Council and Behavioral Health Workgroup, RI Elder Mental Health and Addiction Coalition, the Governor's Council on Behavioral Health, the Executive Board for the Rhode Island Alzheimer's State Plan, and is immediate past president of the Rhode Island Public Health Association. It's Mental Health Month, and sometimes I feel like that's, anytime you have a month that's focused on a specific topic, you sort of pile on with a lot of energy, and then sometimes these issues become, they become lost. And I think that it's obviously year-round, day-to-day, 24/7 conversation, but let's start with this basic question. Where does mental health fit into an individual's overall health and well-being?
Sure, I can start with that. You know, I think mental health has often been viewed as this siloed issue, like it's a compartment of a person, but mental health can really impact all of the different parts of a person. And so I think we're getting to a place where we're able to look at an individual more holistically. That's what the CCA Health Rhode Island model does. But for example, you know, statistically, we know that an individual with heart disease is going to do a lot worse if that's compounded with a mental health disorder. So it's important to be treating both at the same time with kind of this big picture view than trying to address one problem at a time. So I do think that that's very important. Sometimes gets lost in the conversation.
Yeah, Chris, if you want to add to that.
No, I think Sophie summed it up perfectly. That whole person sort of approach is what we need.
Yeah, and there's stigma attached, and there's so many things attached to this issue that are critical to break through. And one area that is, I think, overlooked too often is exactly what you just said, that mental health it's not in its own silo. It's part of and we'll use this term, integrated care type of approach, where just like you would do anything else for your physical health, be it protection from virus or working out or eating healthy, even the most basic things like brushing your teeth, mental health is a critical element to consider, just like you would any other component of your day-to-day health.
Bill, just to go off your point there, the stigma is such a significant problem in behavioral health and really prevents people from accessing the care that they need. And shows like this can help that, to help to educate folks that it's a problem that 30% of the population faces, an issue with their behavioral health. And it sort of normalizes it and helps people to be able to talk to their healthcare provider about it. And, you know, we saw years ago that people were reluctant to talk about cancer. You know, I'm old enough to remember my grandparents calling it, you know, sort of the C word, you know, and no one spoke about it. And we see the ill effects from that sort of stigma.
No question about it. COVID-19, the crisis itself, the lockdowns, the isolation, the virus itself, the fear of it, understanding gaps that were exposed, significant gaps in our healthcare system, coupled with, or in tandem with at least, the impact of the continuing opioid crisis, some doom and gloom that seems to be ever present in our day-to-day news. Has demand for mental health and behavioral health care increased in Rhode Island, and why?
Chris, did you want to start? I'm happy to add.
Well, thank you, Sophie. I think, Bill, you're absolutely right. The pandemic really cast a light upon this issue. I think to some degree it's been a good thing, right? That there's been much more attention in the public to things like loneliness and social isolation and the huge risks for our behavioral health that those bring. I'll defer to you, Sophie, for some of the insights.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. I think in our efforts to try to address the stigma, as we were just discussing, I think there has been an increase in screenings and primary care offices. We're moving towards a more integrated system, which is wonderful. And because of this, we are seeing an increase in demands, and of course, exacerbated by the pandemic. And just, there's a lot of stressful things going on in general in the world. What I worry about is that with this increase in screening and awareness, which is needed, we need to have an equally invested response when it comes to treatment and access. Because otherwise, like, that awareness kind of becomes moot if people can't receive the care that they need.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that one. All right, so I mentioned it, gaps in our healthcare system that were exposed, and we learned a lot through COVID-19. There's some positive takeaways we can get in terms of looking back if we try to almost spin it, right, and look at a situation that was just utterly terrible. One thing that we learned that's horrifying, but we can hopefully improve on, is gaps in our healthcare system. So when it comes to mental and behavioral healthcare and the system and systems, I should say, that are in place in Rhode Island, what are some of the major gaps right now?
Well, one I was just kind of touching upon briefly is, you know, the wait list that we're seeing for providers. So individuals understand that they have a mental health need, that they want to see somebody and address it, but there is a long wait list, and that can be for a myriad of reasons. Either that their insurance, they can't find somebody who will take their insurance, so they can't afford it. Maybe there's an individual that doesn't speak their own language. There's cultural barriers, also disability barriers too. You know, I'm very passionate about the deaf and hard of hearing population and that pipeline of mental health professionals who can, you know, sit and sign with an individual is very, very limited. And so unfortunately, with this lack of treatment, because of the, you know, barrier of the wait list and lack of racially and linguistically diverse clinicians, we see those symptoms worsen, and unfortunately then drives a person to a higher level of care that potentially could have been avoided before. So that's one major thing that I've been seeing.
Chris?
Sophie, I'm glad you touched on the increased barriers that folks with disabilities face. Certainly, the access to care for folks with physical disabilities is a huge issue. The pandemic, again, sort of had a little bit of a silver lining with access to telehealth, because historically, getting into a practice when you have physical disabilities is a challenge. And folks with intellectual or cognitive disabilities have long faced barriers to access to good behavioral health care, and have been disproportionately impacted by lack of access.
So how can we as a state and the statewide healthcare community as a whole come together to address these gaps? And then I'll even kind of narrow this down. What is CCA Health Rhode Island doing specifically?
Sure. I mean, I think we need to be investing in our community-based providers, you know, ensuring that there's adequate reimbursement rates so that individuals can receive the care that they need, regardless of, you know, what their financial background looks like. So CCA Health Rhode Island serves individuals on Medicare or who are dually eligible for Medicare and Medicaid. I know the Medicaid rate discussion is a hot one in Rhode Island, so I won't touch on it too much, but we do need to invest in our providers and making sure that access is there. One of the things CCA Health Rhode Island does is that in addition to contracting with as many providers as possible, we have our own behavioral health clinicians that can provide that type of bridge for individuals. So while they're maybe on that wait list, they don't have to go without until they find that long-term provider.
Chris, your thoughts on what can we do to close some of these gaps?
Well, it you know, as Sophie said, it's has to be a multi-pronged approach. And, you know, one of the things we've been doing at CareLink is really focusing on those populations that really have significant barriers to care. So we go out to long-term care facilities like nursing homes, and we see patients there. We see patients in group homes. We bring the care to the patient. And, you know, there are a lot of terrific sort of pilot projects going on to do those sorts of interventions to break down barriers.
One thing that has, it's kind of fallen through the cracks a little bit, and we have this issue as a whole in our society, but it specifically pops up with mental health, and that is for our elderly population. We spend a lot of time talking about mental health for kids, which is critically important. I mean, this isn't to dismiss or minimize any of the other issues. Mental health for those who are most vulnerable or susceptible to just the general disadvantage the disadvantages that our society and our economic structure creates. There's so many different subcategories here. You don't hear enough about mental health and, frankly, even addiction treatment when it comes to our elderly population. Let's talk about that for a second.
I'm happy to start, Sophie, and then let you jump in. Bill, you're really hitting on a hugely important issue. We know now, and it's become public knowledge now, that loneliness and social isolation are a huge contributor to behavioral health issues. And we know that older adults are more at risk because of that. In addition to the social isolation, they have complex health issues and pain management issues and decreased mobility and functional ability that all contribute to them having more risk for depression. And suicide is something that older adults are often reluctant to talk about. And we know that older adults have higher rates of suicide, and older adults, men especially, have significantly higher rates of lethal suicide. And, you know, one more, I think, really critical point right now, especially with the current controversy around gun safety, is that I wrote it down because I was shocked by it. 70% of older adults die by gun suicide. Yeah. So, the numbers are really staggering, and I'll defer to Sophie for some of the interventions. But I just want to mention the 988 system, and you know, the the opportunities out there. If anybody needs help, to, you know, please call 988.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. And I appreciate that plug. 988 is such an important hotline. And I'm really glad that we've moved to a place where it'll be easier for folks to hopefully reach out and get that help. And to your point, you know, I do think older adults get left behind in the conversation. And it's not to say that one group is more important than the other, but in terms of where we're investing our resources, I think we could be doing more, especially for ways to keep, you know, older adults in their home or in the community, which is where they often want to be. Because you think about individuals who move into, you know, an assisted living facility, we see drop, you know, social isolation drops because you're with your peers, there's activities, you have a, you know, a structured day schedule, which can be very helpful in combating symptoms of depression and anxiety. But what do you do if you're living at home by yourself and you don't have those natural supports? You can come and visit you. So, you know, that's why CCA Health Rhode Island, for example, we partner really closely with Meals on Wheels. And, you know, we know that for many individuals and older adults who receive those, it's not only targeting their nutritional needs, but they look forward to seeing their driver. And that's just, you know, that's something that they appreciate. And any other, you know, homemaking services, utilizing telehealth in a way that's accessible for them so that they can have social groups or learning a new activity and ways to really ensure that every part of our life is enriching.
Yeah, this is all really great stuff. Last question for each of you. You know, your plug to anybody out there who views this issue broadly, mental health, as, again, within that lens of stigma or something that they ought to be embarrassed to address or something that should be, you know, sort of an afterthought in their overall healthcare. What's your plug to each of those people? We'll start with Chris.
Wow. that's a tough question. I think we can learn. You know, you mentioned the different populations that have been impacted and the younger folks that are really struggling with behavioral health issues. I think we can learn from them that they, I think, are doing a much better job of advocating for themselves and going out and looking for treatment and understanding that, seeing a professional or getting therapy is part of a healthy lifestyle and doesn't need to be so hard to access.
Very, very well said. I completely agree that there's that stigma, like many other stigmas, have been eliminated by Gen Z and to a certain extent millennials. But you're right that it is a completely different environment for that generation, and it's inspiring.
Chris, I totally agree. I always say I love Gen Z for making it cool to go to the therapist or to have a therapist. It's so true. It's like all over TikTok and everything. My particular plug would be for healthcare workers and for mental health professionals, especially. I think it's hard for mental health professionals to either seek a therapist or care because they feel somehow like they should know better, or you know what I mean? And what I say to my colleagues is that, like, don't doctors get sick? Don't doctors have broken bones? Like, you're not, you know, just because you are a professional and licensed in this does not mean that you are immune to the same type of stressors and issues that people go through, and you are also deserving of that care. And I think, again, COVID-19 has really exacerbated that issue. And so I just like to remind folks that, if you could major in something and then be immune to it, that would be cool, but that's not how it works.
Very well said. May is Mental Health Month, and it's a conversation we have year-round here on Bartholomew Town, and we'll continue to, and it's something that I'm sure our listeners are always, or I should say, hopefully, are becoming more open to addressing from a lot of different angles in their own lives. This is Inside Public Health, presented by CCA Health Rhode Island, delivering uncommon care to Rhode Islanders. Sophie, Chris, you're both rock stars. Thanks so much for making the time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
At HealthSource RI for Employers, we provide access to health insurance to more than 1,100 local businesses and nonprofits, and 96% of them renew through us every year. Maybe it's our choice of 19 different health plans, our 10 years of customizing solutions, or our one local team of dedicated experts helping employers find quality health insurance. See how our numbers stack up for you. Learn more at healthsourceri.com/employers.